Hi, I'm Adam Abraham. The following conversation is one of a series that have begun to unfold in the aftermath of a call I received that called my attention to an instruction that was being given regarding how to make the taste of MMS, the Miracle Mineral Supplement, more palatable by using baking soda, or in fact, adding baking soda, just a small amount, just to make it taste a little better, make it go down a little easier. The caller was now my a cohort in re-evaluating and rediscovering, and in fact, taking a new look at the evolution and the business of medicine in terms of how it's practiced today, who I call Grant, or GM. His name is Grant. I call him GM. What has transpired as a result of that is, well, questions. In fact, even some concern. And some of the concern is, first of all, the validity of what we have suggested relative to the use of baking soda with MMS at the same time you're taking it. What are the chemical consequences? What changes do occur when that's done? Some could call our own qualifications or credentials into question, but all those come up. And then there is also the factor of this thing called a HeLa cell, which many people are not aware of. In fact, there are many that are aware of it, but the ones that are primarily aware of the HeLa cell right now are making a living off of the propagation of it. The people who it is being used on know nothing about it, and that's really, really part of the problem. So what you're about to hear are excerpts from a conversation that I had with GM, in fact, on the 15th of September, 2012. This is only a part of the conversation because I tend to turn these into videos. But I wanted you to begin to hear more about where this is going, about what the nature of this is. So this is only a fraction, but being only a single source here, not having a big staff to do things, I want to get some information out while I continue to work on some longer form material. So at any rate, this is what follows.
The documents exist, you know, such as in the patents, some of the trials, you know, like in a WF10 patent.
Yeah.
And then the Cornford work, the Sirin et al. Work, NIOSH, EPA, all of these things lead to what we are working on as being accurate. Now, chlorine dioxide, like I looked really hard at chlorine dioxide over the last 10 years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have briefcases full of material on chlorine dioxide. I began considering the fact that there were two forms of chlorine dioxide, and then, of course, I come across the sodium chlorate with the negative ion. But this is actually in a different form. It's not gas. But if you open a bottle of liquefied, you know, sodium chlorate that's in a solution, well, it's going to vent off some bad stuff and you don't want to breathe it.
Yep.
Because what's above that bottle, you don't really want to breathe that. It's not good. But what if that chlorine dioxide was gone and then you just got the benefit of the material that produced it? Now, that goes back to the Cornford work. And that work was actually laid down because of the witch hunt brought against DCA. Because everyone was crying, well, chlorine dioxide is bad, this, bad, that, bad, the other damn thing. Well, yeah, chlorine dioxide is bad. And all of the data I ever found on it states that, yeah, it is bad. It's bad. And remember what I said about the half-life. You know, the pervasive thing, eh?
Long time, yes.
Yeah, long time. 300,000, then a few years. You know, that's how long it lasts before it naturally breaks down. So therefore, you have an incredibly deadly dioxin, which lives 300,000 years, is actually correctly classified as a carcinogen and a mutagen. In other words, it modifies your DNA. So now you're looking at chlorine dioxide through the eyes of an actual chemist that has done incredible amounts of work on it when you're reading those papers. And how do we make chlorine chlorine dioxide neutral. Well, you just can't. You have to eliminate it, eh? So therefore, you're looking at the Corn, Ford, Frost, McDowell, Herring, whatever, you know, the order of the names. You're looking at their work and what happened when the acetic acid high-speed jet mist was impacted into the sodium chloride 28% batch high-speed mist. Like two car wash jets aimed at each other, eh?
Uh-huh.
And the aura of the material was actually producing various weights. You got to look at how that works sometimes. The electron spectrography. But the bottom line on it is there's actually four different parts to that. But the one that they used was the very first one. You know, the spectroscopic study that was, you know, the, how it all began on determining what an atom or what a molecule really was. So in 1971, there was only one way of looking at it. And now there are actually four. There's four different ways. But it's all about emission producing and understanding, you know, the emission produced by an atom.
Uh-huh.
You know, like when you look at a, you know, the very basic one, you know, you point a telescope at the sun and you put a box on the side of it, of the telescope in the eyepiece, and in that box you put a very special blank photographic element. And you let that expose for about 6 minutes and 13 seconds, you pull it out, and then you expose it, and then you look at all those nice little lines. You know, it looks like a bar graph, you know, barcode.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then you can tell what elements are in the sun. Now, this is the very first of it, eh? You know, that was the very crude method of telling what was in a star or a planet or a sun or whatever. That's how it was done. That was done by, you know, way back in the days of Hubble, eh? You know, he actually did that stuff, eh?
Right, right.
Move forward to the actual electron spectroscopy.
Yeah, the Hubble the man, not the telescope.
Yeah, that was a hell of a man, too. He was demonized by the E equals MC squared crowd, too. Marginalized, bankrupted, you name it. Yeah, look into the history of Hubble. Edwin Hubble was an incredible human being. Eh? But you know, moving forward, you look into the 1971 method of doing this spectroscopy. And now, nowadays, I mean, you can, there's many, many different versions of spectroscopic studying.
Uh-huh.
But 1971 is what you want to look at. And you can see graphs, you can find this stuff, see exactly what's produced, and you see the lines that are produced, and there you go, the ionization potentials, and that's what they defined in the Cornford work, 7 ionization potentials. 7 acids or 5 acids and 2 other whatever, who knows what the hell they are, I still don't know, but I'm going to try to find out. Anyway, the bottom line on it is the chlorine dioxide left. It wasn't there after a microsecond. About a third, if I remember right, it was about a third of a second, eh? You know, there was no evidence of it anymore, of chlorine dioxide. So the chlorine dioxide goes away, and then you get the benefit of the actual molecule.
Wow. It's kind of like it's bipolar, and the negative potential of it, I'll put it this way, the destructive potential of it was literally taken away from it, which left the, you know, the restorative, the recuperative, the reparative qualities of it.
What are we saying? Are you saying like when you used MMS?
When you added the acid.
Yeah. As soon as there's an interaction, well, then the chlorine dioxide is very temporary. It's along the same lines as the human cell, accelerating the half-life of potassium-40. You know, from 3 or whatever, a billion years, down to 31 days.
Uh-huh.
You know, the acceleration occurs. Something occurs in that that causes the attraction in between the atoms that produce, you know, the chlorine dioxide?
Yeah.
Something happens that kills that attraction. That's the plainest way to say it. And I don't know what the function is, and I've never read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not too sure. It, you know, people might know it, but it's going to be concealed, eh?
Right.
Yeah, because no one wants this stuff to get out. But back to the Hubble idea here, I'm actually... I'm going to just put this behind me. I don't feel insulted or anything. Just so long as we got the job done that we attempted to get done.
Yep.
Yeah. If people stay the hell away from sodium bicarbonate in this stuff, then he's, and when he talks about the chlorine dioxide in hundreds of places, yeah, that's right. They're illegally using against NIOSH, against the EPA, the Title 40 laws. They are actually using the bad versions of producing chlorine dioxide in water supplies.
That's amazing.
And the sodium carbonate stuff here, you know, what he's talking about, let's say sodium bicarbonate, he does not know that there's aluminum in it. And I can tell that.
I looked on my box of Arm & Hammer baking soda this morning, and they don't mention anything other than bicarbonate of soda.
Yeah, that's right. And Arm & Hammer had bacon aluminum into it, in it until about a year ago, for sure. Because I actually published something about that, and somebody actually emailed me back through that particular blog and said that Arm & Hammer had removed aluminum from its supply 11 months before that.
Wow.
Yeah. And I don't believe that. Because I know that they have bulk sources from China and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because remember what you're doing when you're making this stuff. Well, what's in the damn ground when you're mining it? What's there? And how can you remove the aluminum, you know, from it? When you're actually making this stuff, right? Not only that, what are you making it in? You know, or what are the vessels that you're making it in? Because any liquefied salt whatsoever is going to cause reverse osmosis of aluminum that goes back into its original state. Eh? So it's going to break down and become part of the salt. Because of the ionizing potential of the salt is so great, it breaks down the aluminum. It overpowers the process that created aluminum is basically bauxite, water, and electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It overpowers that, breaks it down, and the molecule comes apart. So now you're back to having that in your damn body.
There are so many variables.
There's another good one for you. Mm-hmm. How about in diet, if you're eating something that's bauxite rich, can the HeLa cell's energy field convert that to aluminum in your brainstem? You know, food uptake from soil?
Yeah.
Bauxite?
Yeah, that's it.
Water's in your body?
So, in other words, we generate the aluminum.
Yeah, we could actually be, like when you look at the energy issues of the HeLa, we could actually be producing the aluminum in our bodies. And that's one of the things, you know, like when these guys are dissing me on the secondary production of elements here, or molecules, I mean, you know, you got to take a look at what happens next.
Yeah.
what happens next, and when it's exposed to this, what happens? When it's exposed to that, what happens? Temperature change, what happens? And remember, this process is endothermic. These guys, they're not really touching on any of the important information. You know, it's a heat-producing thing, eh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's another thing when this is actually occurring. What exactly is happening? Now, I would prefer to mix the MMS in a glass outside of my damn stomach. That's right. And then I want to drink that. Now, I just fed my dog that, and he's a happy camper. Right now, he's thinking about jumping up on the damn chair, and I thought I'd better help him just in case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's back, another dog back from the dead, and I'm sure that... Well, the point is, MMS as it is made, is safe, because there's no chlorine dioxide in it.
One other thing of interest that I saw last night, I just want to mention, is that I found another site where of this company that sells cultures, live cell cultures and things like that, and transfection this and that, and all that kind of stuff.
I know about that.
And needless to say, I found the page where you can go and buy some HeLa cultures.
Yeah, anyone with a Visa can buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. They take Visa, they have major credit cards, and they go from $200 that I saw on the first couple pages to over $10,000 for a single vial.
Yeah, there are some fairly complex HeLa, you know, out there, right? And they're really expensive stuff. That would be the culture you would require to make your own vaccines, eh?
Well.
You know, like if you wanted to follow the poison model of the FDA, you'd want to begin with that batch. And, of course, well, which vaccine are you trying to make? Right? So you're going to have to identify the cells that you're buying, you know, the HL line.
Yeah.
And then you would know exactly what the hell poison you're trying to create or what cancers you're trying to induce in a population. You know, so that's one of those things. Now, the way out of that stuff... I'm absolutely convinced that the MMS is the chloride matrix is the key to putting an end to that. You know, the DMSO, very important. You read that paper, eh?
Yes, I did. I noticed they were using DMSO as the carrier for the tamoxifen.
Yeah, so that raises the question, exactly which was the functional portion? Was it the DMSO Or was it the tamoxifen?
And you know, in their research findings, they were not going to give any credit to DMSO for having any effect on it whatsoever.
Yeah, so you find later papers, the ones that I located regarding the DMSO absolutely stopping HeLa.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it stops it, you know, if it actually ends its mitosis, it might actually be killing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the goal of the paper wasn't to state the final outcome. It was a paper on something else which stated that DMSO stopped the HeLa reproduction.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, then a person would have to look at the other stuff. But remember the stuff on the cell cultures, you know, when they're saying they put a specific count of cell culture in a petri dish and then treated it? Remember the timeline, and they said at the end of it 100% of the HeLa, you know, cell cancer had died?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, it was over 68 hours, if I remember right. Was that right? And it wasn't 96 hours.
I remember it wasn't like in a few hours, so...
It was several days, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, the HeLa just died. But one thing that must be noted there in that tamoxifen, it also said that the dose was micromole. They couldn't even, they couldn't actually weigh it. You know, you could have taken an estimation through, let's say, certain types of magnification.
Mm-hmm.
You could take an average of the culture you're looking at and determine approximately how many molecules are there. But you'd never know for sure, right?
Uh-huh.
But in micromole, you know, I'm almost certain that you would never know exactly the count. But in they said micromole, it was absolutely critical that the tamoxifen had to be at an incredibly low, undetectable amount. In other words, if it's undetectable, is it really there?
Isn't that an interesting way to market a product?
Well, yeah, the DMSO is the active ingredient, in other words. Eh?
Yeah.
And that's what I said to that lady, eh?
But they pay the price for the product. They pay the price for all that research, that big inflated price for the product and all that research. And if you want it to actually work, use all what's negligible, not even detectable amount of it with DMSO.
Yeah, well, I'd really like to find the complete recipe and procedures. I'm going to have to look at tamoxifen and find the patent and all of the workups, eh? And then I'll know exactly what the potential of it is.
Mm-hmm.
Or like without the DMSO, it has zero potential. Yeah, because it goes back to the micromole. How would you administer it? Where do you put it? You know, micromole, we're talking about an incredibly small amount. You can't even conceive of it. It's that small, eh?
I see.
Micromole, look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you apply it? I mean, if you put it in your bloodstream, well, it's not going to definitely do anything because it's going to come up against barriers, it's going to come up against the filtering effect of your liver, your bile, etc. It just goes on and on. It would be useless. But the DMSO, nothing stops it. They showed that the production, the longevity of the CLO2 was negligible.
Uh-huh.
You know, it didn't last very long at all. But what they have done is they have actually, like I made that paper kind of famous by bringing it up in various places, eh?
Right.
And they absolutely rewrote the abstract on it.
Hmm.
And they took the critical information away because that's the information you want. I was surprised to find it in an abstract. You know, because that's exactly what you want to find out. Is the chlorine dioxide there or is it not there?
So basically, and that's paying $36, it should be in the actual paper, though.
Well, actually, yeah, what you want to do is just fire that information off to, just email that link to Humble. You have to look at that work, and then after that, once he understands what that actually says, or whoever the hell is running them at this time, then they have to look at the complete work of Sirin et al., the chloride matrix. Then he has to actually look at all of that stuff. And then he's going to realize that this stuff is exactly the same as the MMS. The only difference is the acid. And as soon as he puts together the fact that there are 7 ionization potentials in the sodium chlorite with acetic acid in that molecule, well, then he's going to, you know, look past all of the other bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
But then basically what you have to do is look at all of that stuff and then try to interact that with baking soda that may or may not have aluminum in it. What are you producing? What's secondary? And then, of course, he's got to look at the other stuff. What about the massive propane molecule? And how does that affect the transfer of, in other words, the migration of the MMS molecule?
Yeah, through the various barriers.
Yes, and then the next thing that he has to consider is whether or not that second action, and that's got to be told to him that way, this is a secondary action that is taking place at the same time. It involves a lot of carbon, so there's definitely going to be linking, because you have put the sodium bicarbonate in the damn batch, so you know damn well that these two separate reactions are working together. You know, so the citric acid is reacting with the sodium bicarbonate. At the same time, the same batch of citric acid, in other words, with no chemical change whatsoever, the same citric acid is interacting with the sodium chloride.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, you stand a very good chance of producing monster molecules and, supersized molecules because of the propane chain. And not only that, you're producing three versions of salt. The mono salt, it's monosodium citrate, I think it is. And, of course, the citrate is going to be used, by the body,
mm-hmm.
leaving the monosodium. And then, of course, there's glutamate.
It'll bind to something else because there's glutathione present in the body itself.
Yeah, there's going to be other reactions down the line, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So the chance of producing MSG in your body is 100%. I found that in some papers about how the body produces MSG itself, but it's going to be a different MSG. The one that the body produces. Because the body won't produce something that's, there to kill it, eh?
Right.
It's going to be a different process. Maybe with chemically similar result, but a different process. If he looks at it that way, but he's got to actually begin with the Cornford. He can begin in the beginning with the DCA and go from there, but he's going to have to get into that Cornford paper at some point, and he's going to have to actually understand exactly what the hell it is he's doing. And that's one of the problems here. I don't think he actually understands what he's actually doing. And like I say, he's third in a long line of guys that are working on this kind of stuff, eh?
Yeah.
1836 on.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's doing, this isn't new. And there's been a ton of work done on it, but unfortunately it's all concealed, eh? There's trials and all kinds of shit there, like the EPA stuff. That's why it's in the water, the sodium chloride acetic acid. That's why it's on food and everything else. Because they did the trials. But that chlorine dioxide from the citric acid acetic acid, citric acid, etc., that's gone right away, eh?
Mm-hmm.
So back to the Cornford work. So he's got to actually see that Cornford work. And he's going to know what the hell it is he's doing. But then that other stuff, the secondary thing with the baking soda, he's going to actually have to open up his mind to that, take a look at it. If his professional advisors from Lentech or wherever the hell are telling him that the sodium chloride interaction with, let's say, citric acid is producing chlorine dioxide, that's not the case. It's the sodium chlorate that's in the damn MMS that should not be there in the first place that's producing the ClO2. If ClO2 remains, that's why it remains, because it's an interaction with sodium chlorate.
Oh, now, you remember we were talking before, I told you that they are using roughly an 81% sodium chloride. And the 19%?
Yeah, what is it?
Well, the 19%, I'm positive sodium chlorate is part of that 19%.
But it would have to be the total. The total 19% would be sodium chlorate. Because that's why you use the platinum, for the electrolysis. You want to completely separate the two chemicals, the two actual molecules.
So, therefore, the chlorine dioxide is produced
by the sodium chlorate,
by the sodium chlorate, which constitutes 19% of the material that the MMS is being produced from.
Well, like I've said now for a year, that MMS should be pure sodium chlorate.
Right, sure.
I've said that ever since I looked at the chemistry of it. But then again, according to these guys, what the fuck do I know? Who am I? So bottom line on it is, the extensive research that I've done into chlorine dioxide, because of the pulping and stuff like that, I could actually speak on this, in public. I would speak at a university or whatever, and I would use graphs or you know PowerPoint presentation and show, you know, this is chlorine dioxide, this is how it's produced, and this is how long it lasts, and this is why it's pervasive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if you make it out of sodium chloride and acetic acid, ascorbic acid, citric acid, humic acid, lactic acid, the chlorine dioxide is gone right away. And here's why. Then I would cite the Sivers paper by Cornford, Frost, Herring, McDowell, and what they proved occurs. The chlorine dioxide is gone in a microsecond.
And so what they're using did not include sodium chlorate.
No, just sodium chloride.
Right. Got it.
And that's why when the NIOSH warning came out on how to use chlorine dioxide in water, they said that your water treatment had to be, must be, in great big font, must be made from sodium chloride and acetic acid. They didn't say 83% sodium chloride. And they didn't say sodium chlorate. They said pure. In other words, sodium chloride alone. That's the only substance, sodium chlorate. Now, when you break that shit down, you know, like when you're taking, you know, whatever salt you begin with, I know that you can produce as low as 25% sodium chlorate and 75% sodium chlorate. But what I really want to do is get some platinum wire, do these things myself, then I'll go down and buy a damn dope scale, you know, and actually start weighing this stuff in malt. You know, what the production differences are from the various salts, but I would go and try to get pure sea salt, you know, from, you know, the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
And because that was the salt that was used in the healing salts many, many years ago. So I would go back to that. You know, I would produce it from that. And see exactly what the percentage is. Because if you can get a really high percentage of sodium chloride, that's what you want. And in the end result, it doesn't really much matter if you're going to separate it. But why not, you know, use a salt that's similarly priced and produces the highest yield, eh?
I agree.
You know, so sodium chloride. Now, sodium chloride itself, it's really interesting. But sodium chlorate should never become part of this picture. It's not used in any of the matrix that are published. It's sodium chloride alone.
If you find this information credible, if you want to know, learn more, I invite you to visit, in fact, subscribe to my blog, Thought for Food, at philosopher.com, as well as HeLaDisclosure.com, which is the HeLa Disclosure site and blog. This is where we'll be providing more information. You can also follow me on Twitter at philosopher, PHAELOSOPHER. I appreciate your interest in this. More is coming. These subjects affect us all. They are affecting us all, whether we know it, care about it, or even agree or not. And that's the problem. If we don't agree, it's okay. They will still affect us. But if we agree, if we see it together, there are things that we can do to change for the better.